The opinions voiced in Investing Simplified are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with an attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Investors cannot invest directly in indexes. The performance of any index is not indicative of any investment and does not take into account the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. A diversified portfolio does not assure profit or prevent losses in a declining market. Roth IRA conversion is a taxable event. Guests on Investing Simplified are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investment services offered through Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're joining us today, thank you so much for making us a part of your day. As always, you can catch replays of our show available on podcasts. That's both Apple and Android devices, as well as Amazon Music. You can also check us out on our website at www.pricefg.com. And some of the recent shows are posted on there as well. This is Matt Sudol and Matt May, wealth managers here at Price Financial Group, coming to you through the beauty of the radio. How are you, sir?
I am doing pretty well, actually, you know, with the stock market cracking into all-time highs recently. One could say that there's a piece of my life that's the best
doing
it's
okay.
ever been.
Yeah.
The best it's ever been.
Yeah. And so not to, you know, crack into it too much, but this is a, you know, show about economy and the markets and whatnot. So we'll
Investing Simplified.
Definitely.
What's more simple than just like holding on to quality investments and waiting for the market to return?
Yeah. Well, again, we try to simplify things. However, complexities continue. For example, S&P 500, as you mentioned, had recently gotten back up to its all-time high. The Nasdaq's also there. And those represent parts of the economy, not the whole economy. So the S&P 500, as a quick reminder to everybody, represents the 500 largest U.S. companies. And small fun fact there would be that each so often, I think it's quarterly, but sometimes it can be more frequent. I don't know the exact number. The S&P kicks out companies and then adds companies to their 500 because as companies potentially decelerate their growth or shrink in size, there are certain requirements they have to hit as companies and they get kicked out and new ones get put in. So both that and the NASDAQ have climbed back over the highs that they had previously set back in the tail end of 2021. So that's exciting news because even though not all aspects of the economy are flourishing, this does bring things up a bit, you know. So we've spent a good amount of time in prior shows talking about how the S&P 500 has 500 stocks, but a lot of the returns has been, you know, seven companies, maybe six companies now. And that seems to be continuing for the most part. There is quite a bit more of concentration in the tech sector. The AI craze is continuing. But we have seen in the last month, I looked at the numbers, a little bit of hope for your favorite asset class, which is small companies, small caps, represented by the Russell 2000.
Sure. In that asset class, there are, of course, 2,000 companies in that index, the Russell 2000. That's if you're tracking your small cap holding, you would generally compare it to the Russell 2000 to see, hey, am I beating the index? Am I underperforming the index? That's just your good measuring stick for that asset class. What you would want to know is inside the small cap asset class, there are a ton of those Russell 2000 companies that are not profitable, a ton.
Right.
So you really want to be careful and selective and have a strategy that focuses on those small companies that are profitable. I think that that's a great way to play that asset class. So it is a challenging market. And what affects those small companies greatly is a higher interest rate.
Right.
And we talked about that in prior episodes where interest rate increases over the last couple of years have had a lot of pain on different parts of the economy and really not much pain for others, like the Berkshire Hathaways and the Apples, where they're sitting on just gobs and gobs of cash. A small company typically would have to borrow money or has some sort of line of credit to fund operations if times get slow.
Right.
And now that borrowing cost is way higher than it was a couple of years ago.
Right.
And it affects their margins. Also, they're dealing with the same thing that pretty much any company, I think, would be dealing with. And that's higher labor costs, with a low unemployment rate. I think it's we're at like 50-year lows for unemployment. It's really challenging to bring on quality people. So the operating costs are climbing, not only just from those interest rates, but also because labor is increasing. I'm sure shipping costs, like everything is going up. So what do you do as a company? You try to pass along those prices.
Right. And yeah. It causes inflation and all that.
Yeah. It's just a self-feeding feedback loop. It just,
absolutely.
You know, prices go up, so you raise prices so you can maintain your profit margin, and then prices go up and then you raise your prices.
Yeah. Well, the reason we bring it up outside of the fact that, you know, it's one of your top liked asset classes outside of international and emerging markets, Bloomberg had posted that in the last 23 out of 24 weeks, they've had inflows into ETFs that, which are exchange traded funds that cover the small cap space.
So that just means more money is going into that asset class over the last 23 out of 24 weeks.
Yeah. And that's commonly been seen on bottoms of economic cycles, meaning that those asset classes usually start performing better first before everything else. And it's been kind of backwards. Mm-hmm. I was looking in the Russell 2000, you know, just on price movement is probably still mid, you know, 14-15% off from their all-time highs. So lots to do. Double digits still. We'll get excited if they get into single digits.
And what has to happen? Do the large companies come down to that minus 15 gap where small caps are, or do small caps rise to erase their deficit?
They might just, I mean, who knows? It could be a combination of things. Recently, within the last month, we've seen a higher increase in their movement versus like the S&P 500. So maybe, you know, S&P, let's say it's up 2 and they're maybe up 4. So they're catching up, but they've got a lot of catching up to do because, you know, it hasn't been the best performer. However, one of the things that many, many portfolios have is this fun word called diversification. And so diversification, you know, doesn't prevent loss. And that's a disclosure we always make that no matter how much you diversify, you can't get rid of all the risk in the portfolio. But when you're building a portfolio, whether it be, you know, when you're younger or older, you have different asset classes. And so one could say, well, why don't I just put all my money in the large companies and leave it alone? And you could. Comes with quite a bit of volatility and potential risk. That's, I always like to say, when one thing zigs, the other thing zags. And so there is counterparts. So in the asset allocation space, we all know bonds. We've talked bonds a lot. And those are actually flat for the year when you look at the aggregate bond index. So they haven't really made us any money. Haven't lost like they have in the past, but a lot of portfolios have bonds in them. And then inside of the bond space, you've got long-term bonds, intermediate bonds, short-term bonds, municipal treasuries, high yields, a lot of things. Then on the other side of the equation, we have some like to call it stocks or equities. And then you have small, mid, large companies, and each one of those then breaks apart into value and growth. So you can have small value and growth, and same with mid, and same large value. And so when you put all of those components together, as we said, some are up at all-time highs, some are making their way back, some might still be kind of beaten up, but the economy usually sort of moves in waves, meaning there is a possibility that at one point S&P starts underperforming other asset classes, and this is why you kind of try to diversify a lot of the time.
Yeah, asset classes and diversification is a lot like a wardrobe, right? You have a closet full of different types of things. Are you going to work out? That requires a different wardrobe. You know, sports shoes and socks, and you don't want to necessarily work out in a suit. But if you're a business professional, you got to have a suit in the closet. Maybe you just have casual jeans and a t-shirt. Maybe it's raining outside, you need a raincoat. We don't use umbrellas here in the Pac Northwest, but I have traveled around the country and I have seen umbrellas.
Those are a thing?
They do exist.
They'd exist then, and they manufacture them somewhere, must be.
We say no umbrellas in the portfolio. That's just, that just stamps that stamps we're right here from Pac Northwest.
Yeah.
Raincoats, yes. Umbrellas, no.
No umbrellas, yeah. Well, and so one of the things that popped in my mind too is when we speak with folks at times, you have people that will say, oh, how do I, you know, allocate my retirement accounts at work. And so when you look at those statements and you have all these options, well, each one of the options or little segments on your statements of options you have available could represent a different asset class. And typically they'll have target date funds, which have a little bit of everything. And then you have, okay, you have bonds and small caps and all of the things I just named. And so one of the kind of mistakes that people make is they'll look at the last year's performance, say, oh, this one did great last year. Let me pile in and do more of that. And so that's the You know, it's a normal and logical and answer.
In addition to that, it's like, ooh, that one didn't do so good. Let's dump it.
Exactly. And so through potentially looking at a scope of, okay, let's have broadly spread our assets further, you could be picking up things that have just been beaten up, because how far more could something grow? I mean, potentially it could continue, but if something's beaten up, but we find quality there, potential quality, not saying let's just buy all 2,000. As you said, some companies are good, some companies are just not great for a portfolio. But if you select the ones that maybe are creating cash flow, meaning they're making money, they're profitable, or maybe coming up with some innovation, and then drop those in a portfolio because they've kind of in a way are, you know, just been unseen by people.
Just overlooked.
Overlooked.
And with that portfolio wardrobe, so to speak, it can, when you look back over the last, you know, 1, 3, 5, 10 years, and you've had a diversified portfolio, particularly the international part of your portfolio. I've been singing the praises of international and the opportunities that I see in international for a while, and that one hasn't come to fruition yet, but I haven't given up on that. I think that particular asset class is attractive to me in addition to small caps and some other spots. If it's appropriate for your portfolio, of course, that would be more of a growth-oriented portfolio, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're looking at the rearview mirror, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, and you've been diversified, it's easy to say, gosh, I wish I just would have had my track shoes on and just raced for it because the market is just so much higher. But there's going to be a storm out there and you're going to want that raincoat, maybe an umbrella. Yeah,
maybe if you're not in Pacific Northwest, right? Yeah. Well, and so
maybe not wear the nice shoes. I wore my suede shoes up to Washington on a trip to go see some clients this week and didn't really check the radar and it just dumped up there. And
you should just put them in grocery bags,
plastic covers bags over them, and there was like de-icer on the thing. Oh, so now they're all like, you know,
not good. Ruined some pair of shoes.
Should have wore the right shoes.
Should have fixed your wardrobe before leaving the house.
With the weather, we have, you know, forecasts, and they're pretty okay with it. In the stock market, you know, there are forecasts, and we'll get to that maybe in the next segment.
Yeah, we'll have to take a quick break to come back. But you know, in essence, again, looking at all the aspects of the portfolio, if you're, you know, accumulating, maybe volatility isn't as big of a problem. Maybe you could just ride the roller coaster. But if you're going to be retiring soon, or if you're retired, you know, a lot of the time, the stability of the portfolio or how much up and down happens is more important. So if you'd like to take a look at your portfolio, have us do a construction, do an x-ray, however you want to phrase it, we're happy to do so. We provide complimentary consultations to our listeners. Give us a call at 503-253-3000. You can also text us to that same number. Again, 503-253-3000. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Leaving an employer can be stressful and overwhelming, but once the dust settles and you're at a new job or perhaps retired, it is important to consider your options for that retirement plan left behind. If this situation applies and you would like to hear more about options available for 401k, 403b, or other retirement account rollovers, please give our office a call at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation with someone on the team to go over your specific and individual situation. We will take the time to get to know you, your goals, and let you know what the best course of action is for you and your family.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. However you're joining us today, thank you for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, we're available for complimentary consultations, and that's at 503-253-3000. You can send us a text or you can give us a call. And our show is available on podcasts, both Apple as well as Amazon and Android. So this is Matt Sudol and Matt May coming back to you after a break. And we were talking about economy. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
And the overall markets. And we were discussing, you know, what's been going on and how things are going. And one of the things that Matt wanted to bring back up is a homework assignment he had from last year. He's been tracking. If you've been a listener for a while, you know that at times we go through and find out what are the big heads out in the investment universe targeting for S&P 500, which is, again, 500 largest U.S. companies, for an end-of-year target. Now, conveniently, most companies will revise their targets, as you know, that happens. That's understandable. But we wanted to see, hey, what is their end of the year target and how far off they were? And not to be, well, actually, I'll just hand it back to you so you can describe it because I don't want to steal your thunder.
Yeah, so just kind of dovetailing on that conversation about portfolio wardrobe, meaning what kind of forecast do you anticipate in the markets? So these are 12 to 14 different companies. There was some calamity in 2023 where one of the companies ran into financial trouble and it had to be bought out and rescued. So UBS bought Credit Suisse somewhere in the middle of March. So one of our forecasters just kind of got absorbed. We'll kind of still use their target. But what I did at the end of December in 2022, when the markets were really down, I found all these company forecasts for the end of 2023 S&P 500 number. And the best one was 12% low. The highest target at that time was 4,200 at the S&P 500. That was the highest of any of this list as far as the target goes. And the stock market finished at 4,769 points. And that was the highest. The closest one was 12% low. That means for every $10,000, if you listen to them, it costs you $1,200. They were 12% low.
Wow.
Yeah. And the worst one, they had a target of 3675, and that was Barclays. So Barclays said 3675, and that would cost you 2300 for every 10,000. They were 23% low on their target.
Yeah. And the reason we bring it up is that no matter how big of a shop you are, no matter how many analysts you have, it is very, very, very hard to tell what the future holds. You know, as we like to joke that we have a crystal ball that's foggy here at the office. It's true. Nobody can really tell what's going to zig and what's going to zag. And to our prior points, again, this year, same thing. Don't know where the S&P ends or the NASDAQ or the Russell or any parts of the economy because we're pretty early in the year.
Yeah. And for reference, the year 2023 started at 3839 in the S&P. So from 3839, the lowest estimate was 3675. They were actually calling for the stock market
year
to go lower.
Yeah.
And it ended up going up 25%.
Yeah. Yeah. So pretty interesting numbers. And again, you know, nobody knows as much as they'd like to tell you they do. And so in order to be prepared, or in our opinion, in order to make sure that you have a good shot at making it to and through retirement is to, number one, come up with a plan. Because if you plan, number one, you feel better. Number two, you have a direction and you've decided. And number two, once you have the plan in place, then go out and find the ingredients that make your plan work. And you then have a better chance at achieving the success versus just, you know, and we were talking about this before, picking the numbers off the page off of your 401k statement or your IRA statement. Oh, this did well last year. Let me go ahead and hop into that. This did poorly. Let me drop it, right? Because it's unpredictable markets.
You and I were talking about some of the new indicators, some of the new news that has been coming out lately as far as the Fed's favorite tracker.
Yeah, PCE.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just recently, we had the numbers come out. So basically, PCE matched expectations. That's Personal Consumption Expenditures Index. The reason they like it is because it's a better gauge of what's going on. So whatever the expectation were, they matched them. So year over year was 2.4 and matched it. And all of that came in fine after having a slightly hotter CPI report, which is the Consumer Price Index report. This was a nice relief to the fact that, okay, maybe we are doing okay. And it seems like some economists and whatnot are calling the adjustment in January just a seasonal thing. Like a lot of businesses adjust prices in January, which would have been potentially why the numbers spiked. But we don't know, and we won't know. And the Fed will continue to hold rates higher until they're convinced, not just they think, until they're convinced that they've won the battle with inflation and with how strong the economy is, as shown by these indices going higher. And, you know, overall, you know, companies reporting earnings that are positive, they don't really have a reason to cut rates, right? Like, why would they cut interest rates if things are going better? I mean, to make them even better than that? Well, potentially.
Yeah, they're really, really concerned about inflation taking back off again.
Right.
That's what happened, as mentioned in prior shows, that in the 70s and early 80s, they thought they had beaten inflation by raising rates.
Yeah.
Inflation dropped, so they lowered rates, and then inflation went to well into the double digits.
Yeah, and so it could cause a snowball where lower rates, more growth, growth causes more inflation, prices go up, and it's a circle, and then it just compounds on itself. Yeah. And so they're being careful. One good news, I guess, also was that the government won't shut down now till the end of March or sometime in March. So they got kicked out, can down the road.
Operating 1 month at a time.
And this is something else that popped up recently. And we've, I don't know how we got on the subject, but I know one of the shows we talked about the legalization and delegalization of parts of our Oregon, or actually I think it's Portland's.
It's all of Oregon.
Is it all of Oregon? Yeah.
Now they're past the Congress. It's the recriminalization of drugs, and now it heads to the Senate. It did have really strong bipartisan support.
Yeah, I think they've looked back at what's actually happened, and now we're like, well, maybe this was not as good of an idea. So,
yeah, there's a lot to that. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot underneath that, but I know that there's a lot of people struggling, and
absolutely,
there's a lot of people dealing with folks that are struggling, and so hopefully we can find a solution.
Yeah, so we can get our local economy, you know, in Portland and whatnot, back up and running, buildings filled, you know, you'd be able to go around places and not have to, you know, be seeing things that you probably shouldn't. And people out
feel
there that
safer.
Need help. Yeah, people get help that they need. So
right.
Kind of went on a tangent there unintentionally. But going back to what we were talking about, you know, the Fed's tracking PCE, they're tracking unemployment, they're tracking everything. Housing is another number that they're looking at. And it seems that any new inventory of new construction homes just gets absorbed with people having, you know, the desire to buy. And if you're in a right financial situation, you could still buy homes, even though the interest rates might be, you know, high sixes or mid 7% range. And so those are the buyers that are out there. New sales going out. A lot of people are sitting on the sidelines. Like when I speak with folks, it seems that if you have a house for sale, people are like, well, I'm going to rent it or kick the can down the road. And allegedly, rents are going to come down because some numbers that I've read that, you know, those could come back down a bit because people just got to a point where they can't afford the higher rents.
Right. And there should be more supply coming on, coming online across the country.
That's maybe the other reason why they would come down.
I did read an article that the city proper, Portland, is considering relaxing some of their building zones. So, you know, right now you can find just sprawling urban cities and then look across the street and it's just nothing but farmland. We have reached the outer limits of those territories, of those zone lines, and they're talking about relaxing that perhaps. It's something that's been in our law for a long, long time, and it would be interesting to see that unwind. Of course, you know, it's a very hot topic. We've got just a shortfall of supply of homes. You're seeing the prices in our areas. If you're a younger would-be homeowner, you're practically priced out of this market right now,
right,
with the rates and the prices that we have.
Yep.
And also, there's really nothing new that we can build because we're up against those zones that were created.
Yeah. So some good, some bad, some of everything. We're looking at these indicators and analyzing things. And so, you know, going back to what we started this segment, the economy is unpredictable. The markets are unpredictable just because of the fact that things are going, you know, relatively well doesn't mean the winds don't change because they can.
Yeah. And one thing that strikes me is that in the last year, a couple of things. One, how negative people were about the outlook.
Yeah.
And also how many people described what we were living in as a recession already.
Yeah.
And it's because the impact of higher costs is really strongly still felt.
Yeah.
There's no real relaxation or coming down of those prices. And I think that that's really not talked about enough. We've mentioned it on our shows, but I think prices are going to hold fairly steady.
Yeah.
When wages go up, which is a big cost to
employers,
pretty much every business, they don't typically go down. You might see, if in a recession, we might see unemployment rise because companies just can't afford to keep people on board.
Yeah.
But those high prices are right now, with a strong economy, they're just kind of stuck there. And it does put a lot of pressure on the consumer.
Absolutely. Well, and so, you know, last year, performance of the market was great, driven by tech and people that work in tech. are associated with tech, they made lots of money, but everybody was, you know, kind of hurting. And if you remove those returns, they were just modest and mediocre. Maybe would have been negative in lots of segments, right? So
I personally was hoping to replace you with AI.
Yeah, it didn't work. I'm still here. So anyway, if you're interested in sitting down with us as we wrap up another segment and go to break and just taking a look at what your plan is, and instead of, you know, a guessing game of what's going to do, you know, what in this year and into the future, sit down with us, come up with a plan. We're at 503-253-3000. It's complimentary, and give us a call, or you could send us a text message to that same exact number. We'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Leaving an employer can be stressful and overwhelming, but once the dust settles and you're at a new job or perhaps retired, it is important to consider your options for that retirement plan left behind. If this situation applies and you would like to hear more about options available for 401k, 403b, or other retirement account rollovers, please give our office a call at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation with someone on the team to go over your specific and individual situation. We will take the time to get to know you, your goals, and let you know what the best course of action is for you and your family.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thank you for joining us. If you're just now joining us, thank you for making us a part of your day. We've come to the part of the show that we like to call Estate Planning Made Simple. And I have with me the owner and founder of eLegacy Law, one of our great partners here at Price Financial Group, Ryan Crandall. Welcome in, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And, you know, as you can probably see, we are in this digital world of Zoom. And so Ryan and I are going to talk a little bit today about some estate planning questions that we've come across, some things we find interesting. If you have a question for Ryan that you'd like him to answer, maybe on a future show or at least give you his perspective, make sure to send that question to AskBo, A-S-K-B-O, at PriceFG.com, because we want to make sure that when we're talking estate planning and simplifying your estate planning, we're talking about things that matter to you in your life. So, Ryan, we were talking a little bit in the break about when you have, you know, an estate plan, the whole purpose of getting the estate plan together is so that way your assets and your, you know, the things that you have go the way that you want them to go at your death rather than the way that the state or the government wants them to go. But sometimes people come, you know, we come across situations where maybe the grantor, as we call them, right, the decedent, doesn't have a great relationship with their family. Maybe there's not a whole lot they want to leave to, you know, kids or to maybe they don't have a spouse or anything like that. They're estranged. What kind of situations do you come across in your practice when, you know, in those situations?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, that's something that we run into from time to time where there's, you know, not great familial relationships. And so some of the questions we get asked are, how do I keep my plan private? You know, what are my options for distributing assets? And, you know, how do we navigate those, you know, kind of sticky situations? And so, you know, I usually start by explaining that, you know, in terms of who you name as beneficiaries of your estate, that's entirely up to you. So sometimes clients have an impression that they're required to leave assets to their children or grandchildren or heirs. You're not. You have complete control over who you decide to distribute your estate to. So that's kind of a starting point with a lot of clients is, so, you know, if you want to give it all to charity, that's entirely up to you. And, you know, a follow-up to that, a lot of clients wonder, okay, well, you know, things aren't great maybe at the time. You know, I'm going through a rough patch with my son and things are not great and I want to write him out of the will, but maybe leave open the possibility that I'd add him back in the future. But I don't know, want him to know what I'm doing. You know, and if I do pass away, I don't necessarily want him, you know, to know all the details of my estate and who I decided to actually give my estate to. And so how much is he entitled to know? And, you know, what kind of disclosures are required? And so, you know, in that scenario, you know, I explained to the client that your son isn't entitled to know what's currently in your documents. You know, when we draft an estate plan, we always explain that these documents typically are revocable and they can be amended and updated. So what you decide to put in your plan today could look different in the future. And we're not required to share any of that information with anyone while you're alive. where that information does potentially get shared is at your passing. And that's where there can be a difference between, you know, the type of vehicle that we use for the plan, whether we're doing a will-based plan or whether we're building the plan on a trust. Because generally with wills, those documents, the entire will, the original will, if it's still available, actually gets filed with the court. And it becomes public record, which means that anyone can go in and they can get a copy of that will and see who was written out of the will, who was written into it. And so that's where there's a potential benefit to using a trust, where we have a greater degree of protection, where trusts are generally carried out informally, outside of the oversight of a court or a public proceeding.
So that's an important piece, right? So you just mentioned that the will is completely public at your passing, right? Because you have to file it with the court as part of that probate process. So if you wanted to keep a little bit away from, say, your estranged son or maybe your sister who thinks that she has rights to, you know, to your money or, you know, whatever the case may be, they will be able to see everything that went down in the probate process because it's in a will. But if you use a trust or utilize a trust vehicle, you're saying they don't get to necessarily see all that stuff, or will they still get to see some?
Not necessarily. So, you know, with the trust, when it comes time to administer that trust, you know, there are disclosures that get made to the beneficiaries of the trust. Mm-hmm. And so typically we'll provide, if you know, those beneficiaries, let's say we have five individuals and they're the beneficiaries of the trust, they will receive copies of the portions of the trust that relate to them and their interest. And not necessarily anything else. So they might know that they're a beneficiary of, you know, 10% of the estate, but they don't necessarily know who the other beneficiaries are. And so that's one way to keep some of that information private. And, you know, another thing, and back to the wills and a probate proceeding, is when a probate gets initiated, there are notices that get sent out, required notices that are sent to interested parties. And generally those interested parties are, you know, anyone that's named as a beneficiary of the estate, but it could also be just family members and children who might not necessarily be a beneficiary of the estate, but we're still required to send them notice, which can sometimes look and feel like an invitation to come in and contest the validity of the will and involve themselves in this legal probate proceeding. And with a trust, we don't have to do that. We don't have to send these invitations for a lawsuit to, you know, other family members that aren't actually beneficiaries of the estate.
And so those are set by the state, or how does that, is that, you know, generally speaking?
Yeah, that's determined by state statute who's okay. required to receive notice of a probate proceeding.
Okay. And so potentially, like if you, you know, hypothetically said, hey, I wanted in that situation you described, said, hey, I want to make sure that my son is only this portion and then maybe I'm affecting it later, but I don't want him to know what the whole piece is. If he's, you know, state of Oregon, for example, he'd probably get a notice that it's going through probate and he'd be able to see all of it.
Yep.
So if it's important to be, you know, discreet, if you want to make sure that it's a little more privacy, you don't have as much sort of open kimono, for lack of a better phrase, right? Mm-hmm. On your estate planning, then a trust can really make a lot of sense.
It can, yeah. You know, trusts as a starting point are going to be handled and carried out privately and informally. Now, a trust can always be wrapped, you know, pulled into a lawsuit. Okay. You know, if that disgruntled, strange family member comes in and files a lawsuit, yeah, they can pull the trust into it, but there's still going to be some protections and discovery they might not, you know, and ways to maybe retain, you know, some of the information that doesn't directly pertain to them. There's a much higher cost of entry, right?
Sure.
They've got to be much more proactive in filing a lawsuit against the trust and the trustee than in a probate, where we're kind of giving them that invitation to insert themselves into the proceedings.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because it's going to be a barrier to entry for them to file said lawsuit because they actually have to get legal representation. They can't just come down to the courthouse and say, hey, I want to I want to see it. I'm, you know, that's my mom. That's my mom's estate. I want to see it. So that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it could be situations not necessarily we've described estrangement where you're utilizing that and trying to keep it private. But could it be, you know, situations where maybe it's not estrangement, but maybe it's just, hey, I don't, you know, maybe a spendthrift child or, you know, someone who has drug or alcohol problems or something like that. So maybe it's not estrangement. You're just wanting to make sure to keep it separate. And I would imagine that trust is also in a situation where if someone passes away with a significant estate and wants to dole out things over time, then that would have to be a similar deal, right? You can't necessarily do that with a simple will.
Yeah, certainly not a simple will. I mean, you can have a will that creates trusts at death, but you know, usually if we're going that route, we would just create the trust during your lifetime, you know, using an irrevocable living trust. So, you know, to your point, yes, if, you know, let's say we've got multiple siblings and one of them is a spendthrift, we can draft in special provisions for that child that provides some more structure and oversight. And again, that could potentially save them and the family some embarrassment if, you know, if we're able to do that in a trust versus in a will where, you know, again, that information would all be public.
Sure. And that, like you said, I like the point you just made about it being an embarrassment for the family potentially, because it's not necessarily that you want to keep things hidden, but maybe you don't want to just air the dirty laundry, right? Even the
let's avoid airing any dirty laundry as much as we possibly can. So, yeah.
That makes complete sense to me. So in terms of how people are looking at it, because we've often talked, you know, when we talk about, hey, whether we need will or a trust, a lot of times folks ask if there's a dollar sign, which sometimes there could be a dollar sign that you're looking at those things, right, because of the probate cost. But really, it seems like it comes down to privacy and, you know, and malleability, right? So there's a lot easier moves. You said it's a little informally as opposed to a will. Then correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is with a will, somebody's got to go to probate. You got to get the court order to move the stuff around, as opposed to a trust. That you know, to, I don't want to use the wrong term, but that springing into, I've passed away, I have everything listed in trust, my son is my successor trustee, he doesn't have to go to the court to get an order to go get my bank account as long as my bank account is in the name of the trust.
Exactly. That's the beauty of it. We're setting all of that up, the structure ahead of time, and the legal mechanism for the people who we want to step into our shoes to do that. You know, that's why probate's required is you know, we have a person named as the executor of the estate, but they actually don't have the authority until they go through that process and the judge gives it to them. With the trust, we don't have to do that. We're able to give them the authority, you know, during our lifetimes. It doesn't require a judge to sign off on any of that. And so that it cuts that out of the process entirely.
I like it. That makes a lot of sense. So that you're able to just a little more control, which I know most folks that I talk to when they're talking about the estate planning piece is wanting to make sure that they are in control rather than the court or the state. And one thing I, you know, I mentioned in there, and I know you and I've talked about it before, but the important thing is if you have a trust, make sure everything's named in the trust, in the name of the trust, right? Because it sort of defeats the purpose if you have accounts that are not in the name of the trust, if you've set up a trust.
Exactly. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there, unfortunately, that have trusts, but assets outside of the name of the trust. And, you know, in that case, what would happen is really that the trust is not going to be much better than a will, because they will end up having to go to court and file a will, what we call a pour over will, to take any assets that were left outside of the trust and pour them into the trust. And so that's a really important part of the process that you brought up. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because even a lot of attorneys and law firms will create the trust, you know, the trust documents, but not go through that process of ensuring that the assets are titled correctly. You know, for us at eLegacy, that's step five in our five-step process is we go through every single asset, all the bank accounts, real properties, vehicles, and make sure everything's titled in the name of the trust, and so that the trust is actually going to work as intended, and we're not going to end up in probate anyway.
Not going to have to chase the things around. Well, that's a great segue. So Ryan, before we end the segment here, when people want to have those questions answered, maybe they just don't even know if their stuff's properly titled, how do they get a hold of you and your firm?
Yeah, they can reach us at elegacylaw.com. Right there on our homepage, you can schedule a time to meet with one of our consultants. You know, it only takes a minute or two to schedule that, and usually we can be meeting with you the next business day and getting that process started. So elegacylaw.com, or you can reach us if you prefer phone, at 888-308-PLAN, and we can get you started that way too.
Perfect. And if you have questions or you missed that, you can always call our office and we will connect you with Ryan and his team. Ryan, thank you so much for being here this, you know, for this segment. It's so important to us to have your estate planning made simple part of the show. We're so happy to do it. So we'll look to talk next week, but I appreciate you joining us. We'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
I'll bet you've heard me talk about eLegacy Law and how Tina and I wanted to protect our family by creating an airtight estate plan. Hey, it's Lars. But eLegacy Law isn't just for our circumstances. They have many ways to help you protect your assets, including community property agreements and pre- and post-nuptial agreements. Whether you're currently married, going through a divorce, or newly engaged or newly married, make sure your estate plan works for you. eLegacy Law is a full-service estate planning law firm that's completely virtual. We worked with an experienced estate planning attorney to get our custom plan done without ever having to set foot out of our house, and you can do it too. The process couldn't be easier. They offer affordable flat fee rate pricing on all estate plans, so no surprises. Go to eLegacy Lars to get the Lars Larson special rate to save $250 using promo code SAVE, only available to my listeners. That's eLegacy Lars to save $250 today. That's eLegacyLars.com. eLegacyLars.com.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. However you're joining us today, thank you again for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, you can catch replays of our show available online at www.pricefg.com, as well as on our podcast, both Apple and Android, and Amazon Music. And then lastly, complimentary consultations are available with someone on our team, and the number to our office is 503-253-3000. Feel free to call or just send us a quick text and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. So wrapping up the show, this is Matt Sudol and Matt May coming back to you, wealth managers here at Price Financial Group. It's been a good show, Matt.
Yeah, there's a lot going on out there, just trying to keep our fingers on the pulse of the economy and the local
news, local economy. And one of the things that we've brought up on a prior show or two is kind of the role of a wealth manager versus a, you know, an advisor, just a financial advisor, and that being the scope of work. So if you walk through a daily life of a financial advisor versus a daily life of what we deal with, it might be a little different, and the experience for whoever's working with us is different. And that has to do with the fact that, not saying that a financial advisor doesn't do what a wealth manager does all the time, but sometimes if you have a person who directs an account for you based on the risk you've decided on and picks the positions for you and just kind of, that's all there is. You meet with them once a year. How do we do? Good, bad, otherwise.
Talk about, you know, what is their best idea for where to invest money, or, hey, you've done well or done poorly on this investment. We have to buy or sell.
That's a part of the job. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure. Absolutely.
But I would say, you know, a good lion's share of what we do on a daily, weekly basis is have broader discussions. We talk a lot, and most of the time, people just kind of listen and nod their heads. When we talk about economy and where we've been, where we're going, what we're looking at, all these different reports we read and educate ourselves on. So that's part of it. And that's not to overwhelm the people in front of us, but mostly to, you know, make investing a little bit more simple, right? Investing simplified.
Sure.
Bring things down to a digestible level, because maybe they've heard the inflation is not coming down as fast as it should be, and they don't understand what PCE or CPI is and all of that, right? So that's part of it. Another part of it is tax planning, figuring out kind of, again, where you've been, where you're going, what's the income look like last year, what are we going to expect for this year, and are there any pockets of opportunity with the income, right?
Right, or potential tax bombs that might be showing up in the future.
Yeah, because tax planning has, you know, ties to income, obviously. So with the income, one of the things that we wanted to make sure we toss out there and just let everybody know is that with how high rates have gotten, it would not be a terrible idea if you are taking income from a, you know, an annuity out there, whether it be a fixed or variable annuity, and revisit it, okay? Because if rates are higher, there's a possibility insurance company out there might be offering a higher payout, and so you could give yourself a pay raise. Now, each case is completely different, and it's based on your age and insurance company rules and whatnot. So the best thing is to call us at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation in which we would review said income stream from an annuity.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Matt, I was reviewing a few cases. These are clients that have been with me a long time. We've had annuities for a long time that have an income rider. What is an income rider? Inside this annuity, there's the ability to sometimes put an income rider or maybe a death benefit rider. It's just a tag along at an additional cost to the contract that provides various benefits. In this case, lifetime guaranteed income stream.
Right.
So they had a couple of cases where they had already taken income off of this product on a guaranteed basis for nearly 2 years. And I thought, I'm going to check just because rates are much, much higher than they were a couple of years ago. For giggles, I thought, I know I'm wasting my time to do this. There's no way I'm going to beat it. I'm just going to send a request in to the folks that generate these types of...
Yeah, our case design team, just to see what's out there.
Just to see what's out there. Just as an exercise to making sure we're getting as much as we can.
Right.
The results blew my mind.
Yeah, because rates are higher. And so we're doing our due diligence. So part of the day is, hey, what are you getting from an income standpoint? Could we do better? And in, you know, some cases, it could be 10, 20, 30% more. Some cases, it'll come back. It's like, nope, you're getting a new SPL. And guess what? That is a really good conversation to be had too. Because if I'm going into a meeting and I tell you, hey, Matt, you're getting the best deal out there. I checked. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Like, just validation that, hey, if you've got something like that in your portfolio and rates are high, wouldn't you want to just make sure that it's the best? If it is the best, you know, if we can't
just checking
it,
off a box, it's part of
it's
part
not
of
a
process.
Good idea to move it.
Yeah, making sure you understand where you have and is there a better mousetrap even right out there. So it's important to review. And if rates come down, doesn't mean all these opportunities go away. But while rates are higher, encourage everyone that has either taken an income already or maybe is getting ready to take an income off of a fixed or a variable or any sorts of an annuity product out there to give us a call to just say, hey, how does it compare? You know, I wish you could do that with like Social Security or pensions where you could say like, hey, Social Security rates are higher. You should pay me more. They don't do that. Neither do pensions once you're in. But there are other places which you could potentially do it with. So we talked about the income planning, the tax planning. Those are great. Then we talk into family and estate considerations. I call it family planning, but family planning would mostly revolve around, okay, what are your kids or grandkids doing? Can we be of service to them? Could we help your children set up retirement accounts or review them? It's things we dive into because it's important to us, because if those folks are important in our clients' lives, we want to make sure they're top of mind for us as well, right?
Yeah, and we're coordinating with these clients' estate attorneys and tax professionals.
And just to see, you know, and making sure that we're connecting with them. You know, I've had calls with a CPA around tax time. It's like, hey, with the client there. It's like, hey, what do we got here? What do we have there? Making sure your forms are all in, right? 1099s and whatnot. And then from an estate standpoint, there are, and I don't see it as much, but it comes up frequently enough, people with missing beneficiaries that maybe call, right? And do a review with us. Or maybe it's, oh, I have a couple kids and one of them special needs and they're named on there as a beneficiary, whether when they maybe should be named a different entity. Maybe it's a trust for them or something, right? Consult with an attorney. So those things come up. And if you don't review it, how do you know, right? So it's a very wide net that we do cast as a wealth manager. Obviously, we do the investment piece as well, making sure we're monitoring and driving that. But there are other pieces of planning, you know, like right now, could you make a contribution to your Roth or traditional, should you, for last year, all the way till tax filing deadline? Or what should we be planning for if we were to do a Roth conversion later in the year, which I should say is a taxable event. But as we plan out the rest of the year, this is a time to plant seeds about, okay, what's the income going to look like? Is there any wiggle room, as you named it, opportunities in the tax brackets to maybe maximize? And again, we run some numbers, we talk, consult, and then obviously check all of that with your tax professional. But all encompassing, the process is a lot more involved on our end. Clients then sit, you know, we review, talk, and have discussions. But a lot of the homework, I call it, happens behind the scenes. And that's kind of what I would want. You know, if I'm working with a professional, you know, like I don't do my own taxes, I expect to my tax professional to say, okay, here's what you gave me. Here's some ideas of things you should look at.
Right.
You know, I don't
they come with a questionnaire that says,
if I'm paying them to do it.
317 things that might have happened in your life last year. Let's go for it.
I'd almost be
And do, sometimes, just like in the tax world, in our world as well,
yeah.
sometimes it's just a one-off year where you had that particular event that year only. And, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of being your accountability partner to right. make sure that yeah. we're getting the data that you need to build a quality financial plan.
Yeah.
Because it's like Social Security. It's like, that's a tough one.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Sometimes I would put it at about a 60% chance of success for me with clients. Like, it's, you know, I use some percentages here. But Social Security was designed to be 40% of your income in retirement. And I would say 60% of the clients that I work with can get me that number. And I'm the accountability partner
yeah,
on the
okay.
other 40%.
Let's check on it.
It hasn't left my radar, but yeah. I'm still working.
Well, and we could use hard. Projections, so that's helpful
yeah.
based on income. But it's always good to check Social Security as well. Yeah. So it's quite a bit, you know, and it's not just a single linear thing where you just sit down and go over one or two things and move on. And going back to what I was talking about with an accountant, if I have somebody that's working for me, with me, I'd want them to post questions and bring up ideas. So things to consider.
Yeah, sure. And also there's that one other piece that is what has changed with the law, right? Particularly in our world, over the last 4 or 5 years, the rules for required minimum distributions
right.
or RMDs has changed from 70.5 to 72 right. to 73. And then in 2033, it changes to 75.
Yeah.
And just being able to sit with a professional that knows, hey, you're in this range to where you have a 10-year clock or yep. you have a lifetime lifetime to take out those distributions.
Absolutely. Yes. Answer questions, plan things out so you're not surprised. And then we're about to wrap up the show. So, but one thought did come up to my mind as another last item, because rates are still high, and I will encourage people, because I'm still seeing lots of lazy money out there, lazy money in bank accounts, savings accounts, whatnot, getting paid less than 0.25% all the time. We see it, unfortunately. Give us a call. Let's talk about what options you have, and let's provide you some ideas, because it's money that should be earning you more than what the big banks or even credit unions at times are paying.
Yeah, so. It should be higher than inflation, which whatever number that you use,
sure.
I would say 3.2% is the number to beat. And like right now, high 4s, 5% is out there, you don't have to necessarily tie your money up in
right.
a CD to get that.
Yeah. So wanted to toss it in there because we've talked about lazy money a lot on the show before. And
it's
with
the
that,
easiest thing I wake up to do is like, okay,
move some cash around.
I can get 5% plus right now
yeah.
on safe money.
4 or 5%. Sure. That's great. Above inflation. So give us a call if you're interested in that or doing a financial review and a complimentary consultation with one of our wealth managers here on the team. Again, the number here is 503-253-3000. Thank you so much for listening. And this has been Investing Simplified.
Leaving an employer can be stressful and overwhelming, but once the dust settles and you're at a new job or perhaps retired, it is important to consider your options for that retirement plan left behind. If this situation applies and you would like to hear more about options available for 401k, 403b, or other retirement account rollovers, please give our office a call at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation with someone on the team to go over your specific and individual situation. We will take the time to get to know you, your goals, and let you know what the best course of action is for you and your family. Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Leaving an employer can be stressful and overwhelming, but once the dust settles and you're at a new job or perhaps retired, it is important to consider your options for that retirement plan left behind. If this situation applies and you would like to hear more about options available for 401k, 403b, or other retirement account rollovers, please give our office a call at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation with someone on the team to go over your specific and individual situation. We will take the time to get to know you, your goals, and let you know what the best course of action is for you and your family. The opinions voiced in Investing Simplified are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with an attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Investors cannot invest directly in indexes. The performance of any index is not indicative of any investment and does not take into account the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. A diversified portfolio does not assure profit or prevent losses in a declining market. Roth IRA conversion is a taxable event. Guests on Investing Simplified are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investment services offered through Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Leaving an employer can be stressful and overwhelming, but once the dust settles and you're at a new job or perhaps retired, it is important to consider your options for that retirement plan left behind. If this situation applies and you would like to hear more about options available for 401k, 403b, or other retirement account rollovers, please give our office a call at 503-253-3000 to schedule a complimentary consultation with someone on the team to go over your specific and individual situation. We will take the time to get to know you, your goals, and let you know what the best course of action is for you and your family.